For having me giving this talk. I talk about TV observation of extragalactic sources and go a very brief overview of the status of the experiments, focus on experimental results, and we have quite a lot, as you will see, different experiments, mainly for radio galaxies, blazars, and starburst galaxies. These are the three types of extragalactic objects that TV gamma ray instruments do see. I will not mention galaxy clusters, which are predicted to be seen, but which we haven't seen up to now. And I also won't address gamma ray bursts, which we haven't seen with TV gamma ray instruments up to now, but probably will be seen at some time. Then I have a brief summary. There are three major Cherenkov telescope experiments right now. Veritas here has four 12-meter telescopes. MAGIC has two 17-meter telescopes, and HASS has this four, also four 12-meter telescopes. Recent updates is that one of these telescopes of Veritas was moved to a new location, giving it a wider footprint. And we also had a new point spec function for the telescopes. Altogether, we have a new sensitivity, which is now 1% QAP in 28 hours. And so right now I think it's the most sensitive experiment in the world. MAGIC, they will have a second telescope, and they start already taking data with that, but two routine stereo observations will still take a few months. Then they will probably be better than Veritas below 100 GeV, and HASS is building this very big 28-meter diameter telescope, which might start taking data then in mid of next year. We're going to start with the radio galaxies, and two radio galaxies have been discovered or have been detected at TV gamma rays. So one is M87. Here are beautiful pictures, radio, optical, X-rays, here on a scale of 20 arc seconds. The second object is SEN-A, also here an overlay of X-rays blue, beautiful picture blue, then submillimeter and optical red and yellow. So both of these objects have been seen for TV gamma ray instruments. The point spec function is open 1 degree, so you cannot resolve these sources. And the best localization accuracy you can get is 5 arc seconds. So for TV instruments, we know that the TV emission comes from somewhere here. For SEN-A, it comes from the very center here of the core, but we cannot pinpoint it better than that. But I think we have made a lot of progress in pinpointing where it comes from, and I will show you the results. So the first interesting observation was that this knot here, HST1, which is seen in X-rays and in optical, had a major flare in 2005, 2006. 2005, you see that this is a core, and then 0.86 arc seconds away, you see the HST1 knot, and it flared in 2005. And at the same time, this in radio, you see the knot brightens and a little new knot appears. And so this X-ray flare, which coincides with the appearance of a new radio knot, seems to correlate with TV fluxes. So this is the X-ray brightness of the nucleus, and you see a lot of variations on short time scale. And then the HST1 knot, like 60 parsec projected distance away from the core of the radio galaxy. And then you see the TV fluxes, first measured in 1999. And then a flare, which seemed to align with this peak from the HST1 knot. But then the flare decayed of the knot, and the TV gamma ray fluxes were still high, so this broke the correlation, and it seems unlikely that the knot HST1 is responsible for the TV gamma ray emission. While it's kind of still consistent that it correlates with the X-ray emission from the core. So it breaks the correlation with observations. Just wanted to mention this very rapid time flux variability as seen by HASS here in 2005. You see flares on a time scale of 1 or 2 days, the flux varies. And the light crossing time for the black hole, there's been a re-estimate of the mass of the black hole. It's now 6 billion solar masses by Gensel. And so the light crossing time is 8 hours, just the Schwarzschild radius, or 16 hours, the diameter of the black hole. So the flare time is on the time scale of the light crossing time. And these are newer results where you also see very rapid flare on a time scale of 1 or 2 days. So it's on a time scale of a few Schwarzschild radii. I want to show you the most recent results. It's a beautiful multi-wavelength picture where you see the optical emission, and this is on the scale of a few arc seconds. And then with the VLBA, you can zoom into that and then get images on with a resolution of 0.2 milliarc seconds. And 0.2 milliarc seconds corresponds, 0.5 milliarc seconds is 50 light days or 80 Schwarzschild radii. So at the very best resolution, we have a resolution of 20 Schwarzschild radii with this observation. And we had a very nice campaign with Veritas, MAGIC, and HESS together. We monitored the source, and it coincided with regular monitoring of the source with the VLBA. And just show you the results. So this was previous observations. This is in 2008, and we had a very nice flaring phase seen with Veritas, MAGIC, and HESS. At the same time, these are Chandra observations of the HST1 knot. The flux decayed, but the core showed a peak flux, and this was actually the highest X-ray flux ever recorded with Chandra from the core. And from the radio then, this is the central resolution element, you see then that the flux increased quite dramatically, and that is the brightest radio flux seen from the core ever since it has been monitored. So altogether, we think there's pretty good evidence for correlated radio X-ray and gamma wave flare. Here. And you see that when the gamma waves are active, more or less the radio increases, but it continues to increase while the gamma wave flux is already down again. You can then look at the VLBA data with a resolution here of 30 Schwarzschild radii and see then what happened when the TV flux became bright. And what you see is that mostly the central resolution element brightens. So we think we have evidence that the gamma wave flare is connected with the brightening of the radio flux from within 30 Schwarzschild radii or 50 Schwarzschild radii. The flare comes from a central resolution element, more or less 50 Schwarzschild radii, but that's a projection effect. The jet probably points to us with an angle of 20 or 30 degree. So we think that probably the TV gamma wave emission comes from a region of something of 150 Schwarzschild radii from the black hole. I made some very simple modeling to explain this time lag. You see the radio flux increases over a few weeks. And then just try to model this with some plasma, which is injected and then cools adiabatically and becomes transparent as time passes. But if you do this very simple model and you have simulated a hollow cone, you take the gamma waves as injection, determining the injection of relativistic electrons into the jet, then you have the plasma has to go down very slowly down the jet here, only with 40% of the speed of light. So this model is not very good. We think the jets are faster, but the blobs, the synchrotron blobs, become transparent too quickly in this model. Just wanted to remind you, maybe if you know that there's been some breakthrough with simulating jets here with magnetic acceleration confinement. There were early theoretical ideas, 76. Which seem to be confirmed by general relativistic MHD simulations. It seems that the magnetic field is able to collimate and launch the jets to high Lorentz factors of 10 or 50 or so. What's kind of interesting, if you look at the simulation, it seems that the magnetic acceleration is quite slow, and is over a large spatial scale of 1,000 Schwarzschild radii or so. So if it's true what we think, that the jets accelerate at very small scales, it's some problem for these models. But another model I wanted to show you is a recent paper here from Giannios, Utsdensky, and Begelmann, and they explain this data from M87 with some mini jets. So there's a jet which propagates with a bulk Lorentz factor of 5 or so, and then it's assumed that you have a magnetic reconnection, and this powers little mini jets, which also have inside the jet Lorentz factors of 5. And most of them here, half of them will then emit in forward direction, but some of these mini jets, they point like backwards almost, and then we see the emission from the mini jets at an angle of 20 degree of the jet. And that's kind of a very attractive model here. The Lorentz factor of the mini jets is just the square root of the magnetic energy density divided by the particle energy density. Once you have the reconnection, it reduces the magnetic energy density of the plasma in the jets, and then, for example, you can get values of 1/3. You have then energy per particle. Before reconnection, it's like this sigma parameter times proton mass. Afterwards, you only have the square root of the sigma parameter here, energy per particle, so the rest can go to particle acceleration. But there's still no good theory to predict how the acceleration spectrum should look like in reconnection. But the model explains the fast time variability and the gamma transparency of the jets, even though the Doppler factor is 1, because the jet is not pointing to us. And the reconnection could happen through kink instability, C of the magnetic fields, or reverses in the black hole magnetosphere of the magnetic field direction. So it's an interesting model, I think, which is worth further consideration. They model here the observed data, and they model the observed TV gamma ray energy spectrum. And they also show how this jet would see like if we really look into the mini jets and the jet pointed towards us. And then the predicted spectrum looks like one of the spectra of blazers that we do see. That's what I have for radio galaxies. So it's kind of interesting. There's some evidence that the gamma rays come from the very center, very close to the black hole. For most TV bright AGNs, 24 of the 26 detected ones are blazers. Yeah, and the two AGN which are non-blazers are the radio galaxies. All the higher Z objects are blazers. And the high end is 3C66A and 3C279, somewhat uncertain redshift here, this one, and somewhat uncertain detection of the second one. Unfortunately, we took a lot of beautiful data, but you will see that the data is not very conclusive up to now. So all the observation of blazers haven't led to any breakthrough. And I'll show you a few recent results. Macarian 421 monitored here in X-rays with satellites, lots of flares, at higher hard X-ray energies with the Burst Allard telescope on SWIFT, and then Whipple and Veritas data, you see major flares. You see some correlation here, some active phase and X-rays and TV gamma rays, so there's still some evidence for X-ray TV gamma ray correlation. We have some nights here where we have very high fluxes, 10 times the flux from the Crab Nebula, with significant detections every 2 minutes. Very rich data set, some evidence for X-ray TV correlation. You get beautiful energy spectra here measured in the TV gamma ray energy range from a few hundred GeV to 10 TeV. If you look here, the correlation of flux to hardness, the spectrum gets harder. These are Whipple points in blue, and the Veritas are black. Flux average and individual points taken in individual 20-minute bins are gray. And you see the spectrum gets harder and then saturates somehow, maybe even gets softer at the very highest flux. That's just an observation without a good explanation yet. So that's for Macarian 421. In terms of particle acceleration, we want to see how the spectrum evolves in time. And the nicest data here comes from the ZAKU, just in the X-ray regime at TV gamma rays. The hardness, the statistical errors on the spectral indices are not very small, so it's better to look at X-rays. Show you some results here from a nice campaign we took with the ZAKU in May 2008, a 4-day period, and you see there was just a major flare and then several bumps, and I have here the emission in 2 energy bands, and then the spectral hardness ratio, how it evolves in these 4 days. It's kind of interesting, like John Kirk had this nice paper, how the spectra should evolve depending on the relation, on the time scales for particle acceleration and particle cooling. And we can try to find this here. So in the beginning, we have a lot of cooling, probably a decaying flare. And you see that the spectrum gets softer and softer. So maybe that's cooling. Then the next flare, there's a little flare here, and the spectrum gets harder to the maximum of the flare, and then suddenly gets softer. Here another flare, where the spectrum gets almost already much softer before the flare reaches its peak. And here a third, where the spectrum stays hard even after the intensity goes down. So unfortunately, every flare looks different. And in some, the spectrum gets softer, it gets harder before the flare, sometimes it gets softer before the flare. But look at these two flares in more detail, where you see as the flare becomes stronger, the spectrum softens already, and we get here a counterclockwise spectral index hardness diagram. For another flare, as the flare ramps up, the spectrum becomes harder and harder, and then stays hard even though the flux go already down, so hardness against flux. So unfortunately, the main message is that the behavior seems to be erratic, and it's difficult to determine model parameters because every flare seems to be different and could have a different magnetic field, different size of the blob. And it's not clear what causes flares right now. So the Okay. Let's go quickly. One more campaign from Hess here. They have a beautiful campaign with this TB fluxes, enormous TB fluxes, flux changes on 2 minutes time scale, X-ray coverage, and optical barely changed here for this object, 2155 minus 304. They were not able to model this with a single self-comp model, so you need external photons to model this very large increase in TV gamma waves and small increase in X-rays. But so here, for example, you see the optical barely changes, and there was a later campaign with Fermi together where you have TV gamma wave flare over 12 days or so, and where the optical changes a lot and seems to track the TV gamma waves. So it's also the multi-wavelength behavior which changes from epoch to epoch when you observe these objects. And so which it's not really clear for these objects which synchrotron frequencies map to the gamma wave frequencies, and it seems to change from flare period to flare period. We also had a nice Fermi Veritas campaign with optical coverage, Fermi coverage, and you see a flare and a TV flare here ramping up at the end of the GV flare. We modeled the data, can compare synchrotron self-comp and external comp. And external comp always fits a little bit better, but we have more freedom in fitting parameters. So I want to leave the topic of blazars. Main conclusion is that models have a lot of free parameters, and it's difficult to break the model degeneracies because all the flares are different. Last topic is gamma waves from starburst galaxies, and we had a nice detection with Veritas from M82. Here's an X-ray picture. You see the star formation region and the X-ray wind. We have this very high star formation rate, high supernova weight, high cosmic ray density, high gas density. So there was a long-standing prediction that we should see starburst galaxies at TV gamma waves. And we observed M82 for 137 hours and had this nice 5 sigma excess after trials, because we used two cuts, soft and hard cuts. After trials, 4.8 sigma, and you see here's the source. In optical, M82 is only a few arg minutes, so we cannot resolve. Our angle resolution is 6 arg minutes. So we don't see it. It's a point source, but it's a sure detection. It seems to be a steady source. This is a cumulative excess in gamma waves as a function of time. And in 140 hours, we collected something like 90 gamma waves or so, but they accumulated constantly, so there's no evidence that they come from a supermassive black hole or so. We've fitted a spectrum. I will show you. That's just some model predictions from Persic et al. And they show the predicted inverse Compton emission from electrons, pion emission, and electronic Bremsstrahlung emission. And then we zoom in here and show how this compares to the, here's the Veritas spectrum. It has spectral index of 2.5, but a 1 sigma error of 0.6. So within 2 sigma, you can have a very hard or a very soft spectrum. And you see it kind of lies close to these predicted pionic and electronic emissions. And it will be very difficult to say if it's leptonic or hadronic. So probably it will be interesting to see how this connects to a Fermi detection, and then maybe there's some evidence of how it could, if it's leptonic or hadronic. This model here uses the electron spectrum is normalized with the help of the 1 gigahertz synchrotron emission, and they use equipartition hypothesis, get something a magnetic field I think of 60 microgauss. Constraints on the proton spectrum is constrained by the radio emission of the secondary electrons. So the proton spectrum should be pretty flat. Otherwise, you would have too many secondary electrons. The true spectrum should be 2.3 or harder. And in addition, more or less at the same time, Hess discovered emission from the starburst galaxy NGC 253. Here's the Hess source, and NGC 253 has a larger optical extent. In this case, a gamma wave emission, you can localize it to come from the central region of the starburst galaxy. Also, in this case, the measurement is just above the, or just inside the predicted flux ranges. To summarize here, M87 is a unique laboratory because it's very close and has this very supermassive black hole of 6 billion, 6 billion solar masses. For example, SAN-A has 55 million solar masses, so this is much more massive, and it's, you know, it's like 2,000 times more massive than the black hole in our own galaxy. So we can actually resolve M87 black hole as good as we can resolve the black hole in our own galaxy. There's some evidence that the gamma ray emission comes from the jet collimation region, less than 50 Schwarzschild radii divided by the viewing angle, sinus of the viewing angle from the supermassive black hole. Blazers, we have seen 24 sources, all kinds of blazers, lots of broadband data. Simple one-zone models do not work. There are a lot of flare-to-flare variation, which make it difficult to break model degeneracies. Hope that we're getting more thermal TV data, and let's see if we can get more constraints with the combined data. In Starburst Galaxy, we have two firm detections, which are just at the limit of what the present generation of Cherenkov telescopes can detect. Both telescopes had to look for more than 100 hours. And so it's nice that they are there, but it probably will be difficult to study them in more detail with this present generation of telescopes, just because it's difficult to observe much more than 100, 200 hours. Okay, thank you.
Magnetic field, for instance. I mean, what about the losses? So, do that limit how closely to the black hole that the high energy particles can be produced?
Right. So, in this recent paper by Begemann and Giannini, what's his name, they discussed this and they said it cannot be closer than 100 Schwarzschild radii from the black hole. If you take your sine theta is 0.3, we are like at 150 Schwarzschild radii, so it's just kind of at the limit. If you look at the radio data, once the central element brightens up, but also some surrounding elements get brighter. So maybe that we really are seeing that it's happening at about 100 Schwarzschild radio away from the black hole. But as you say, it's kind of, that's one of the challenges that the photons have to escape and that you don't see gamma attenuation. And but it seems like that there's no strong infrared source there. If you would have some strong infrared, it would absorb the TV gamma rays, for example. And it seems they come out, and it's consistent with observations, with the direct observation.
Just there. Any other questions?
I'm just wondering, what is RG? Is this the Schwarzschild radius for an unspinning black hole, or this is GM over C squared? What is the RG here?
The Schwarzschild radius?
Schwarzschild radius, is it 2GM over C squared, or this is GM over C squared?
2GM over C squared.
2GM. It could be smaller. The black hole could be smaller if it's spinning
if it
fast.
Or so, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it's important, but just point.
Oh, that's right. No, that's right. It's kind of getting
everybody was ready for their coffee. So,
okay.
Take a coffee break.
Thank you.